and welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this talk show on travel. And today I have in the studio Steve Gumbel, founder of Telluride Blues and Brews Festival, one of the big, much-loved festivals, music festivals here in Telluride, Colorado. And I would like to welcome Steve to Travel Fun.
Well, thanks for having me, Mary Beth.
I am thrilled to have you here because, you know, to have somebody here talking about a festival is really fun. I think I've done film, I've done mountain film. Anyway, I've done a number, and you were on my list, so we can check that off. And I want to hear how this got going so many years ago.
Yeah, sure. You know, we're going into our 21st year of Blues and Brews, and it started out in 1994. It was just a beer festival on Main Street, and back then I was a ski bum and had purchased a liquor store here in Telluride, and I sort of got involved with the ever-growing microbrew industry. It was really booming in the early 90s, and so for several years, we would go to the Telluride Wine Festival and drink enough wine that we were really sick of drinking wine and go drink beer. And we would go down to our favorite watering hole and people would say, you know, you should really start a beer festival. And I was like, yeah, it's not a bad idea. So we did that about maybe 2 or 3 years in a row. Finally, I did it and created the Telluride Brewers Festival in 1994. And was hoping for 500 people to show up, and well over 1,000 did. So I knew I was on to something at that point in time, and each year it grew a little bit bigger, and 1997 came around, and thought it was time to take a little bit of the focus off of just beer on Main Street and add some music. And leading up to 1997, it didn't take me very much to do the festival, to put it together. So I gave all the money away to charity. So in 1997, I didn't give quite as much money away, and I started to invest in bands to complement the beer. And I grew up listening to the blues and obviously owning a liquor store, loved beer. So I thought, wow, what a great combination, beer and blues. So in 1997, we changed the name to the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival and started taking any money that was made during the festival and just getting more music. And each year, we'd make a little bit more money, and I'd get a bigger band, and more people would come. And I'd get a little bit more money the next year and get even a bigger band. And, you know, finally, it just kind of each year just grew exponentially, and you know, here we are 21 years later, and 9,000 people a day for 3 days come to Telluride to drink beer and mainly to listen to really good music.
I love that story. I didn't know that's how it got going. I knew bits of it, but it's good to have the whole picture. And we have to say, you have one of the best weekends of the year for this festival.
Yeah, it's a great time to be in Telluride. It's a great time to beat the heat, you know, if you're coming up out of Phoenix or the South. You know, I mean, we're an international festival now, but September in the Rocky Mountains are just a magical time to be here. The leaves are just starting to change during the festival. Sometimes we get some snow on the peaks in September, and it made sense for me to do this festival in September because it's just a great time to be in the Rocky Mountains.
And it's always the third weekend in September.
Yep. We're pretty consistent there. We have the Telluride Film Festival is always over Labor Day weekend, and then the Imogene Pass Run, which is a run between Ouray and the town of Telluride, very popular, is the following weekend, and then we come in with our craziness, and we're the third weekend. So,
all right, Steve, what is it that you enjoy the most out of the festivals? I'm sure, you know, year after year, you've seen it grow and evolve. And what is it that really does it for you? Because I'm sure it represents a ton of hard work.
Yeah, it's I've created a monster, and, you know, I never thought, you know, 21 years ago that, you know, it would be what it is today. So it's a tremendous amount of work. I have 4 full-time employees, and we do a couple other events, in Colorado as well. So, I think the best part of the whole event is just seeing a smile on people's faces. That's my paycheck, really. People in the park, we do this in Telluride Town Park, and it's absolutely probably one of the most stunning venues in the world, definitely in the country. There's Red Rocks and there's the Gorge and things like that, but Telluride Town Park is just an amazing venue, not only for the attendees, but also for the musicians. I've seen some incredibly passionate performances by musicians who just don't get to play in a place like Telluride and on this amazing stage and looking over 13,000 foot peaks and waterfalls and things like that. But you know, my paycheck is just the smile on everyone's faces. And I remember one year, the Black Crowes had played in Telluride, and it was really one of the very first rock and roll shows in Telluride. I mean, we're famous for bluegrass, and we had the jazz festival, and this was blues, but blues rock, and it was the Black Crowes, and the chill that was running up and down my spine, I can't really even describe it, but the energy that was in the park of people just ecstatic, just having so much fun. I think that's my favorite part is, and always during the grand tasting we have on Saturday, there's over 56 microbreweries and about 150, over 150 different kinds of beers that people can sample for 3 hours on Saturday, relatively early in the day. But there's inevitably every year, there's just this big holler in the middle of it, and everyone just whoop, you know, there's a big whoop, you know, like just this big shout out, and everyone's like doing a big toast, and that always makes me feel really good as well.
It is the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival. And as you mentioned, you have some rock bands come in. And I think it's good to note also that you've had some amazing headliners, usually the big acts at night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've had...
Talk about some of the folks that have come in the past.
You know, probably one of my favorites would probably be the Allman Brothers.
I was there for that.
Yeah, that was... That was a lot of fun, and we had Joe Cocker.
That was my first blues.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that was a good one for us, and Joe Cocker, who has a home.
Oh, yeah. I've got to see him sometime. Like, maybe I can put in a special request with you to get him back here.
You know, I hear that he's dealing with some health issues, and I'm not quite sure if we will hear Joe Cocker play anymore. But
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but. Who knows? I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he'll be hard to put a voice down like that.
Right. And he is a Coloradan.
Yeah. He has a place not too far from Telluride. In fact, he came to Telluride back in, the early 90s. And Bill Graham did a festival here one weekend, and Joe Cocker played at it and fell in love with southwestern Colorado and ended up buying this huge, beautiful ranch a couple hours away from Telluride, and has called it home ever since then, you know. So, but yeah, Joe Cocker, you know, one of the most memorable for me was probably James Brown, because that was the weekend of 9/11. 9/11 happened on Tuesday, and the festival was that coming weekend, and, you know, really everything in the country was basically shut down, including flights. We had to lease a jet to get James Brown here, but it was one of the most amazing weekends of music and friendships that were built during that weekend. But James Brown, we got him here. We decided to do the festival. There was only one other music event that weekend happening. Most sporting events were canceled and stuff, but I kind of thought about what blues meant and where did it come from, you know, and it sort of came out of Africa and slavery and working in the cotton fields here in America, and a way of healing and making yourself feel better. And I thought about it long and hard and decided, well, this is a blues festival and the country needs healing now more than ever. And so we decided to have the event, and it really, people still come up to me and talk to me about that weekend, that experience, and the friendships that they created. It, there was no classes, there was no rich, there were no poor. It was, everyone was on the same playing field, really. Very, very even, and it was a beautiful weekend. And James Brown came out and for his encore, and wrapped himself or ripped a bunch of flags that we had put up all over the stage, and ripped them and wrapped himself in an American flag and sang "God Bless America."
Oh. Which I've was got goosebumps, yeah, and I'm it on was the verge of tears.
Yeah,
you tell that story.
Amazing, you know. And James isn't with us anymore, but you know, I got to spend time with James Brown and hear him sing "God Bless America" a cappella.
Oh, that's beautiful. I am visiting with Steve Gumbel, founder of Telluride Blues and Brews Festival, and I love hearing these anecdotes, the history of the festival. In the second part of the show, we'll talk about this year's festival, but I do like hearing you reminisce about years past. I thought one of the greats also was Willie Nelson.
Yeah, of course.
Love, you know, Willie.
Yeah, and I'm lucky there again, too, because, you know, the altitude, you know, we're at, you know, almost 9,000 feet, and that altitude always worries me. But I had been trying to get Willie to come, and he finally, you know, it's not easy. Everyone's like, why don't you book Eric Clapton? I'm like, well, yeah, I probably can't afford it, and B, it's such
a I would love it.
Yeah, I know, I would too, but it just doesn't, the dollar signs don't add up.
Hasn't he heard how beautiful Telluride is and every artist wants to be on the town park stage?
Yeah, I sent him, he's a big fly fisherman, so I sent him a big, beautiful book of fly fishing in the San Juans and said, you know, come fish, and it just doesn't work that way with these big musicians. It's a big machine. Anytime those, you know, you go see a large, you know, international touring musician, it's not, they just don't hop in their car and, you know, grab their guitar and come and play. It's, you know, dozens and dozens of year-round salaries and different, I mean, it's hard to get anyone, but we got Willie Nelson to come, and that was a highlight. But he now, you know, ever since then, that was about 3 years ago or so, but he won't come to the mountains anymore. He won't come to, because of the altitude. He's getting old. He's 80 something, right? And so he won't come to the altitude. So we're very lucky that we got to have Willie on that stage, which was definitely a treat.
I enjoyed it immensely. Steve, let's take a little break, listen to some music, and then when we come back, before talking about this year's festival, let's talk about some of the other festivals you've gotten involved in.
Sure.
The other projects. Yeah,
that would be great.
Aspen.
Okay. Yeah, I need my head examined.
And the website is TellurideBlues.com. Take a listen.
The first time I met the blues, he and I was walking. I was walking down through the woods. Yeah, the first time I met you, blue, you know I was walking down through the woods. Yeah.
And welcome back to Travel Fun. I am visiting with Steve Gumbel, founder of Telluride Blues and Brews Festival, a festival that's been taking place here in Telluride for 21 years, the third week of September. And Steve, you've gotten yourself involved in some other music festivals. Would you like to talk about that, or music events?
Yeah, sure. We have two other events that we do in Colorado, and the oldest of those two is the Durango Blues Train, which is comes out of Durango, the Durango Silverton narrow gauge steam locomotive, you know, a train from the early 1900s.
One of our country's big treasures.
It's really an absolute
the world's people come from all over the world to ride this narrow gauge railroad.
Yes, I was in Australia on a steam train, but they knew more about that train in Durango than I did. I live here, you know, and it's an absolute amazing piece of history that you can still experience, and it's an absolute treasure that we have here in the United States. Actually, my friends, work or had worked on the train. And a few years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, they invited me to ride on what they call the pop car, which is a kind of a one-lunger, very small car that kind of goes pop, 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 pop like this. And that's why they call it the pop car.
And why does it make that noise?
Well, it's a one lunger. It's got one piston.
Oh, okay.
It's a very old piece of equipment, and they call them one lungers, and it's one cylinder that kind of pops. It just kind of keeps itself going, but makes a popping noise, so they call it the pop car. And what they do is there's two things that they use this for. In the early morning, they take the pop car all the way to Silverton and make sure that there's been no rock slides or no trees across, so that the tourist train can make it to Silverton safely and back. And then another pop car actually follows the trains with fire suppressant, so that quite often with a steam locomotive and coal fired, there's a lot of cinders that fly out of that train. So the other purpose of the pop car is to follow the train and put out little fires. The train's always making fires, and we know how dry. Yeah, and southwestern Colorado is so dry typically in the summer. So anyway, so I got to ride on this, and I'd been actually thinking about an event like this because a friend that worked on the train told me about a beer festival on a train, and I was like, wow, we should do like a blues thing, and rode the pop car, you know, that before the sun came up, and ended up seeing that day a black bear, a whole herd of bighorn sheep, and then coming down from Silverton to Durango is a little more downhill, so we could go without the pop 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 noise, and we were just coasting, and we came upon two beautiful mountain lions frolicking on the tracks. It was just, and people were like, in Indian lore, do you know what that means when you see those three animals in one day? And so many people that have worked on that train have never seen mountain lion while on the train because it makes a lot of noise. But right. We were in this tiny, tiny little car just kind of coasting down the track and surprised these mountain lions. It was a magical day, and kind of said, you know, the blues, at that point it was the Blues and Brews train, but, you know, I said the, you know, it, we have to do this. It was such a magical day. It's such a beautiful piece of history, and it goes through some of the most amazing area of the mountains of southwestern Colorado. So anyway, I went to the train, and they're like, you want to do what? And we convinced them that we could put a sound system on the train, and that we should take the chairs out of, they call them gondolas, which are open air, so that when you're on the train riding to Silverton, you can be out in the fresh air. Take all the seats out of that thing, and we'll put a band on each end of the train. We'll put a box car with generators on it. We'll wire the whole thing with sound. We'll take some seats out of the other coaches and put solo or duo musicians in it, and we'll go for... We don't go to Silverton because of the distance, but we go the round trip The round trip time for this train is about 3.5 hours, as long as we don't break down, which, knock on wood, we haven't broken down ever. But it's an old train, and it's absolutely historical and beautiful, and blues on the tracks.
It just goes together,
yeah.
And beer.
Yeah, and then there's good beers on hand, and so it's a 3.5 hour trip of two bands and four solo musicians, and you can just go from car to car, coach to coach, and listen to band or solo blues musician for as long as you want, and go check out the next one. And it's becoming very popular, needless to say. So,
and that happens in May every year.
Yeah, and it's becoming so popular that they were like, you want to do what? But once they realized that we're good people and that we were concerned about the safety of the train and the historical relevance of the train, and that we were a team player, they saw what we did, they asked us to actually do another one in August. So this is our first time that we're doing actually four trains.
Oh, is this a scoop?
Yeah,
I haven't heard about it.
No, it's the best kept secret, right?
Yeah.
No. This is our first year for adding a second weekend of the train in August.
So is it every year at the end of May?
Yep.
Last weekend in May? Is it?
It's always like weekend? It's either the last weekend of May or the first weekend in June.
Okay.
Sometimes it's the 31st and 1st or whatever, but right. This year is actually 30-31. But we try to go right on that border of in between the end of May and June, and then we added August this year.
And when does it take place in August?
It's August 22nd and 23rd. So
that's my birthday, August 22nd.
Well, there you go.
Fabulous.
Now we know what you're doing for your birthday. So happy birthday in advance.
So that's typically the third weekend in August. I assume this is going to become a tradition.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think it will. I mean, it's selling really well, and we don't, you know, there's only 280 people on the train, so each night, so it's not this big crazy amount of people. So,
and how many nights do you have?
We do it. We started out just doing it once, one night, when we first started. This is our fourth year, I think, now, and we just did one night, and then it's so much work to wire. We have we created this harness for all the wiring. It's super safe, and it's so much work, though. It's days to install the sound systems in all these cars that we went to 2 days. So we do it a Friday, Saturday, and this year we're doing it actually four times, though, so two weekends.
Okay, so do people typically go one night, or is it like the festival? You can do both nights if you want.
Yeah, for sure. And this is, we decided just for that purpose this year that we are changing the music each night. So there's a few bands that are playing both nights, but for the most part, it's different music each night. So if you want to, you can see different music each night.
Nice.
But it's a great way to see the train. The train to Durango to Silverton is a long train. It's an all-day affair, and it's almost intimidating at some time. It points because it's a big commitment.
Right.
But here, you can do it after work on Friday. You're committed. It's no different than going to see a show, out to dinner and go see a show, really. It's a three and a half hour commitment. You get the experience of that coal locomotive steam engine pulling you up the mountains, and I said this to one of the musicians. I go, you know, the tracks here just keep beat. That's your beat for the when you're playing,
right.
You know, the clacking of the tracks. And he thought that was pretty funny. But it's a great way to experience the train and music without making a huge day commitment out of it.
And so. Durango, Colorado is such a wonderful town. You go there and spend a couple of nights and just have a ball.
Yeah, if you go to our website, because that's what I thought. I'm like, there's so much to do down here. So we have an itinerary. You know, make it a weekend, I think, is what it says on our website. And just click it. And there's Mesa Verde is, you know, the Indian cliff dwellings that are literally 45 minutes away. Some of the best fishing in the United States, gold medal waters, are half an hour south of Durango. The mountain biking, the whitewater rafting. I mean, so we had this whole itinerary and then go out to dinner here. You know, we just had this, we just came up. It was really fun to come up with. Oh, there's like four microbreweries, I think, or five breweries in Durango. So we came up with this whole itinerary to make it a complete weekend of doing the train and also a crazy amount of other fun stuff to do in Durango. So yeah, Durango's an amazing, amazing little town here in southwestern Colorado.
Okay, so from Durango, now let's go to Aspen. You've gotten involved in a festival there.
Yeah, it's, and then I'm a glutton for punishment. It's actually two weekends after after the train. So we're coming off one event, and we're actually, you know, we basically pack up our bags from Durango and head right on up to, it's actually in Snowmass, not Aspen. But yeah, so we... the town of Snowmass actually asked us to come up and take a look at an event that they had been doing for about 10 years, which was called the Snowmass Chili Pepper and Brew Fest. And
I have to raise my hand. I was a judge at the Chili Pepper Festival a few years
ago. Oh, you were? Yeah.
So I know about that before you became involved. So that's fun.
It's a good event. And but I think, unfortunately, it was just sort of, you know, I think it was just stagnant. It wasn't a bad event. It was just wasn't going anywhere, and they really wanted to build on it. And they knew through kind of a someone that had worked up in the town of Snowmass, who had a friendship with me. They knew about Blues and Brews and asked us if we wanted to come in and see if we could pump some life into the festival. So we did, and we made some major changes to it, and we actually changed the name of it, but it's still the same time of the year.
And
we created the Snowmass Mammoth Fest because they found a Colombian mammoth there, actually not that many years ago, maybe I want to say 6 years ago, a full-on, like a cousin to the woolly mammoth. So there's a big play up there on the word, you know, mammoth. You know, can you dig it kind of thing. They do a lot of promotional stuff, and we thought, well, that let's just tie into what Snowmass has this amazing find a few years ago. So we call it the Snowmass Mammoth Fest, and there's still chili, 2 days of chili. There's a day of beer, so it's similar to Blues and Brews in that sense. And so there's about 25 microbreweries, and then you know, 2.5 days of music, and we moved it down into the town park, which is a beautiful facility. It's very similar to what Telluride has to offer, a gorgeous town park, and
in Snowmass.
But it's in Snowmass. Yeah, this is completely a Snowmass event, and so that happens always in the middle of June, and that's our newest baby.
Terrific. I'm visiting with Steve Gumbel, and we started out talking about the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival. Then we segued into the Durango Blues Train, and now the Mammoth Festival in Snowmass, all wonderful musical events that he's become involved with. Steve, sadly, we've run out of time. For this year's lineup, let's just direct folks to your website, TellurideBlues.com.
Yep.
And also, you have so much more going on. You have a new venue that you added.
This year, we have a new venue, and we put this little stage up in the campground for the campground folks, and they're right on a waterfall.
Nice.
We
could do a whole other interview.
Yeah, we could. Blues and Brews is really an experience. And once I always tell people, I'm like, once you come, you're hooked, you know, plan on coming every year after that, because everyone has so much fun. And that's why I do it, I guess, you know?
Okay. Well, I'm going to be posting this interview at my blog, bonjourcolorado.com, as a podcast, and with lots of photos and links and all those kinds of good things. Steve, thanks so much for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Yeah, no problem. That was a quick 25 minutes, wasn't it?
It sure was. Take care and good luck with all your projects.
Well, same to you, and thanks for having me on this.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.
I'll do it slower.
Yeah, well, the cold has a hard time finding me. like some folks I know. Yeah, oh, the men down in Union Square are worried about the snow. 'Cause when your pockets fill with dollar bills, your heart forgets to eat. Yeah, it's a wicked thing.